Located in Louisville, Kentucky, Waverly Hills Sanatorium is a former tuberculosis hospital in a state that seemingly had the highest cases during the early 1900s. As one would expect with all of the death seen within its walls, it's said that some of the spirits have remained. Whether they can't seem to get out or simply don't have anywhere else to go, there are some spooky stories visitors share to this day from one of America's most haunted places. Welcome back to the Lady Dicks Podcast. I am your host, Tay, and I am obviously here with my co-host, Andrea. And today, we are talking about a creepy hospital. Gross. Hospitals might be the worst for me.
Yeah, they're not. Hospitals are not fun.
Hospitals with ghosts are, like, not good, but
they're whatever. Extra creepy.
Whatever. It's cool. It's great for creepy.
Hey guys, Andrea here. We're glad you didn't ghost us. Per usual. Yay! People like us, I think.
Yay! You came back!
A few people like us. Per usual, before we get to our story today, we have to go into some housekeeping matters. This podcast is 100% made for adults, so we'd highly recommend that you forgo listening with the kids around. We talk about some pretty gruesome topics, and our language isn't always the best. We also mix paranormal and crime stories with a little bit of humor, which isn't everyone's taste. So if you're not a fan, we are not the podcast for you.
We are also an independent podcast. We work really hard to put out quality content, and we try not to miss our schedule, which we definitely did last week. We apologize. But it does take a lot of time to produce a podcast if you've never done it. Just take my word for it. It takes a lot of time and a little bit of cash. So if you do want to support us, there are ways that you can go about doing it. You can go to ladydicks.com/support and use our links to shop. There's also some other information on the support page that just kind of gives you some tips and tricks on how you can help us out. Tidbit, if you don't have the money, you can just share the show with someone. We really appreciate that too. You can also purchase our newly released walking audio tour of Hollywood Boulevard in Los Angeles. That's if you happen to be in Los Angeles. It is like a GPS located tour, so I think you could listen to it if you really wanted to without being there, but I feel like that would be less fun.
I feel like that would be really not very fun.
I mean, I guess it would be like a speed version of the podcast, so I'm not like opposed to it if that's how you feel about it. We partnered with Trivia Tours. They're an audio tour company based here in Canada because we love Canadians because we are Canadians. And so we're super stoked about that. So you can find the information for that on our website. It's actually still pretty close to the top because I really want people to go and listen to it. And we have more coming up. So if you like them and you're like, I would really like a walking tour of my city, if you tell us what your city is, we can put it on our list. So long as they have haunted spots, because not every city has really good haunts. I'm just saying.
And I mean, you could help us up by telling us where some of the haunted spots are.
If you don't want us to miss your favorite haunt, then please let us know what it is. And you can also join us on Patreon. We're a podcast, so basically everyone else has one, so we also have to have a Patreon. We did drop an extra piece of content last month. We are planning on doing that maybe this month. I just looked. It's the 22nd of March. We might not be able to this month. We are working on creating more Patreon content. Like I said, there are two of us and many platforms that we put stuff out onto. So just bear with us. We are changing a few things about the show. They're not going to be things that you don't like. They're going to be good things, but we're just trying to make it easier for us to produce really good and a little bit more content for you so you get more benefit out of listening to us. I don't know what I was going with that. Anyway, so we do have a Patreon. You can go to the Patreon to hang out with us, or you can hold out for more content. I'm not going to judge you either way. We also have a live show coming up this week, which is kind of
eek.
Yay. It's not in person. It's online. It is definitely why we missed last week's episode. That's my fault, because I'm prepping for it. So whatever, it doesn't matter. Blame me. I'm cool with it. So if you want to come to this live show, it doesn't cost you anything. You can join us at twitch.tv/thespookytraveler. That's with two L's. We are Canadians. We spell it correctly.
Ooh,
fighting words. And so that's on Saturday, March 27th at 12 p.m. Mountain time. That's where we're both located. For those of you on the East Coast, that's 2 p.m. and the West Coast, it's 11 a.m. And obviously those are East and West coasts of America, North America. So if you're somewhere else, I don't know what the time is. I think MDT is GMT minus 7, but I could be wrong about that. You can just search like Google like Calgary time and figure out where you are in relation to that.
Or mountain time.
The thing is, there are two mountain times, although I think they're currently both on the same time zone at this time.
Oh, I didn't know there were two.
There is standard and daylight. We're on daylight because we
change.
Yeah, we observe daylight savings.
We change from standard to daylight. Yeah.
So half the year,
which I wish that we would not do.
I know, it's so annoying. So half the year we're actually on Saskatchewan time and half the year we're on Mountain Standard time is how it works. Anyway,
I thought Saskatchewan though was central it time
is.
Zone.
So half the time daylight savings mountain daylight time is the same as central time half the year. And the other half the year mountain daylight time is the same as mountain standard time. That's where it gets confusing.
But we are actually in the mountain time zone.
We are in the mountain time zone. But because we observe the daylight, because we have the D in there, this is such a weird conversation. Because the date.
No, it's true. But you have PST and EST in there, and they're both on daylight savings.
I chose PST because those are the standard times. Those, like Vancouver would observe. Like Vancouver is probably on PDT. But I said PST because PST is always 2 hours ahead. It's complicated. I went with standard times because they can figure out
whatever. I thought
that
standard time was when you like were in the, like when you go back.
No.
And daylight time is when you go ahead.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
But also, I know that BC is. Like, they've agreed to not observe daylight savings anymore, but they still are doing it.
Yeah. Well, okay, no. From what I understand, with my clear non-knowledge on time zones, is daylight, MDT is for places, like, zones that switch, and MST is for zones that stay the same all the time, that they don't observe daylight.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought
so.
That
I went
switched.
With PST because it's the standard time zone. So if you are on PDT, that's your own problem. You got to figure that shit out for yourself.
Okay.
I don't actually know how time zones work. I am not a timeologist.
What?
Is that a thing? I don't know. Never mind. Okay, whatever. It doesn't matter. We're going to be hanging out at 12 p.m. Mountain time. Okay, mountain time. 12 p.m. Noon mountain time. Noon Calgary time. Google it. Pretty sure it's GMT minus 7, just saying. We are going to be recording A Taste of Vancouver. This is the only time you're going to find out that the episode is beforehand. So we don't usually tell you. I'm telling you because I want you to come. I don't know if that's true. I do. That is true. I would really like you to come. That's not why I'm telling you. I'm telling you because I know. Also, because the organization that we are. So this is a part of an event called Streaming for Survivors. It's put on by WAVA, Rape Crisis Center. And they are based in Vancouver. So I told them when we were talking about this that we would do like a taste of haunted Vancouver. So that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be talking about some haunted places around Vancouver, which is lovely. Our goal is to raise a measly $100 for them. We would really love you to help. That will cover sorry, one hour session of one-on-one counseling, which is like $60, or 1.1 hours and 1.1 hours of immediate emotional support. If you feel bad about just only covering the like 0.1 hours, you can donate a little bit more and help us out. Maybe we could get out for the $100. Anyway, so all of the money that we're taking in for that is going directly to them. You're not giving us anything. We have like a thing called Tiltify, which records the money as coming in from our campaign, but just goes directly to Wava themselves. So we would really encourage you to do that. The donation link is actually currently on all of our social media channels, I think. And then you can also obviously find it on our website. All right, I'm done. I'm done the self-promotion. 20 minutes in.
I feel like some of that should probably be cut out, but...
I feel like we'll probably just leave it in because I'm lazy to... if we cut stuff out, then I have to go figure out what has to be cut out, so it's not being cut out.
I get it.
It is what it is.
I get it. but now we'll get back to our story.
Back to our original programming.
By the dawn of the 19th century, consumption was killing one out of every seven people, quote, that had ever lived. End quote.
I only put that in quotes because I thought it sounded weird and I didn't want to be blamed for saying it.
No, it does sound like, weird.
I didn't want us to be blamed.
No. It sounds weird. I don't normally read quotes, but that one I felt needed to be emphasized.
It seemed relevant.
Yes. For a world with a population of less than a billion, this was big news. Seriously, if the population was 500 million, that meant that 75 million would die of the disease. For those of us that don't...
Which is a lot.
What's that? Which is a lot? Yeah, that is a lot.
I said, which is a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people. Tuberculosis was a real bitch, man.
For those of us that don't know...
Oh, sorry, I ruined it! Terrible
person. Oh, well. For those of us that don't know what consumption is, it's actually just tuberculosis. No big deal. Which today,
no biggie,
according to the World Health Organization, or the WHO, is a completely, quote, preventable and curable disease, end quote. Again, I'm speaking the quotes. Because, yeah, you don't really want to get tuberculosis, but, you know, it's not as devastating as it would have once been.
Yeah, well, the World Health Organization doesn't say it's, like, cool.
Though millions of people are still affected, it's most common these days in Africa, the West Pacific, and Eastern Europe. And it's essentially a bacterial infection in the lungs, which can also attack the kidney, spine, and brain, and it's spread through airborne infection, just like COVID.
Yay!
Yay, COVID!
Yay!
Tuberculosis was widespread throughout America in the early 1900s, and it was the leading cause of death in Kentucky in 1938, which also happened to be the highest death rate in the entire country. Because it was such a widespread epidemic, there were really long waiting lists for hospitals. For those that don't know, an epidemic is a widespread occurrence of infectious disease as opposed to a pandemic, which is an epidemic occurring worldwide or over a very wide area crossing international boundaries and usually affecting a large number of people.
Okay, so... In 1908, because obviously people were dying of tuberculosis and they would like to stop it or contain it, construction on a somewhat temporary two-story wood-framed hospital that would be able to accommodate a whopping, are you ready, 40 to 50 patients began, and Waverly Hills opened on July 26, 1910. Unfortunately, they miscalculated the need for the hospital and it was very quickly overcrowded and was filled to the brim with 140 patients. a new, larger, permanent building was needed to care for the area's sick. So in 1924, they started the construction on a brand new 180,000 square foot four-story facility that opened October 26, 1926. The upgraded version of Waverly Hills was a state-of-the-art for the time, of course, hospital, and featured separate patient rooms, sunrooms, modern labs, recreational space, and the room to accommodate 400 patients. Advances in medicine started to lead to a dramatic decrease in cases of tuberculosis, and in the 1950s, Waverly Hills Tuberculosis Hospital's patients' numbers dropped to an average of 373 people. I'm assuming that's at like a time, it could have been at a year, or at like per year, maybe. Sorry, I assume it's per year because they can only accommodate. No, never mind. Beep, beep, beep. I'm gonna assume it's an average. That they have at the time. A decade later, by 1960, the number had dropped again to 293. And by 1962, the hospital was officially closed and any remaining patients were transferred to the nearby Hazelwood Hospital.
The hospital reopened as Woodhaven Geriatric Center in 1963 as a rest home for the elderly. But that was somewhat short-lived because it closed in 1981, with all of the patients again being transferred to Hazelwood. At one point, some genius wanted to take on Rio de Janeiro and erect the world's tallest statue of Jesus on top of the building.
Yay!
And turn it into a worship place of sorts. But that plan was kiboshed after they only managed to raise 31,000 of the 4 million they needed. In 2000,
it's a really expensive statue.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, how tall is the one that's in Rio? Like,
I don't know. The one in Rio is huge, and they wanted to put a bigger one on. They specifically said they wanted to rank the Rio de Janeiro
also
one.
Putting it on top of a building, like, that sounds like a disaster really in the making.
I mean, I feel like they could have just went with beside. It probably would have taken, like, shaved a million or two off the end bill.
Well, I just don't know how you would make it structurally sound to put it on the roof.
I don't think you would. And that's why the project failed.
In 2001, the building was purchased by Charles and Tina Mattingly for $250,000. They may or may not own it right now. It's a little unclear, but they did manage to put in a new room and a sprinkler system inside the building. Well, that's really good because it probably should have had a sprinkler system to begin with, given that it was built in, what, the 1980s? When was it built?
30s.
Oh, okay.
30s? 38?
So I feel like they would have had to bring it up to code before 2001. Anyway,
1926. Okay. It said the second version of
right
the
God, can you imagine? Anyway,
I know.
Overall, the building is in pretty rough shape, but there are some cool pictures online.
So we did a thing.
We definitely did a thing.
We made an audio ghost walking tour with our favorite audio tour app, Tripvia Tours.
Tripvia makes these really cool self-guided audio tours that you can listen to while you walk or drive, depending on the tour. So it's like you're on a group guided tour, like you'd take on vacation, but you're by yourself.
Kind of like a vacation for your mind.
Definitely a vacation for your mind. Our first tour was just released, and we're taking you on a historical, ghost-filled walking tour down Hollywood Boulevard.
So if you're in Los Angeles and you're itching to hang out with your favorite hashtag dick squad, download the app, get the tour, and head down to Hollywood Boulevard, and we can all go for a little stroll through history.
Here's how you get your own copy of the tour.
Head to the Apple or Google Play App Store and type in Tripvia. That's T-R-I-P-V-I-A, in case you can't spell, and download the app.
When it's downloaded, you can hop into the app and purchase the tour. Every tour purchased helps make it so that we can bring you more awesome content and future ghost tours.
Once you've finished the tour, make sure to jump on your favorite social media app and let us know how much fun it is. And don't forget to tag @TripviaTours on Facebook, and Twitter, or at @trivia_tours on Instagram, so they know you loved it too.
Where do you think we should go next?
I've got a few ideas. Waverly has seen a ton of death within its walls, so it's not entirely surprising that it's said to be one of the most haunted places in America. Tuberculosis, sometimes called the White Plague. I did not look into why it was called the White Plague. I was going to. It was on my list, and then I was like, ah, fuck it. Because I was writing.
Is that like in comparison to the Black Plague?
Maybe. I'm going to say probably yes, but I don't know why the Black Plague was called the Black Plague.
Because what was the Black Plague again?
Let's find out. What was the Black Plague?
It's another one of those diseases.
Someone, one time at the very beginning of our podcast, someone commented that we Google shit while we're podcasting, and I just want to say you suck. And I don't care. I'm just kidding. We do Google things, so we're working. The Black Death was a
bubonic plague. Yes.
Bubonic plague. Struck Europe and Asia in the mid-1300s. It arrived to Europe. We should do the Black Plague. Arrived to Europe in October of 1347 when 12 ships from the Black Sea docked at the Sicilian port of Messina. That's probably why it was called the Black Death, because the ships came from the Black Sea. Interesting. Yes, it was probably the White Plague in comparison to the Black Plague, because the Black Plague was a pandemic. Was a pandemic, and so was this. Nope. Tuberculosis is an epidemic. Boo! I fucked up.
But I feel like people actually interchange the words epidemic and
but
pandemic.
The thing about it is, the thing that differentiates it, and the reason why COVID is like so, like SARS and whatever were considered epidemics.
I thought SARS was actually considered a pandemic.
It was not, because we haven't had a pandemic since the Spanish flu. And the reason why this one is...
Okay, because that's not what I read about pandemics, although don't get me started on it. I'm not going to voice my opinion on this podcast. Well,
my information on the epidemic versus pandemic stuff comes from one of my aunts that's a nurse, and so I'm gonna take her word for it because she's currently working in healthcare and I don't know anything about it. Anyway, it has to do with the spread and just also our travel habits in 2020/2021 actually has really shitty travel habits. Our lack of travel habits.
You mean our travel that's been banned in 2020 into 2021?
It's basically just how fast we can travel the world, and like we can be in a place in like 24 hours, like anywhere in the world. Anyway, whatever. Okay, wait, what was I saying? It was the White Plague. Okay, so it was really contagious. We all know this. And it spread through simply coughing and sneezing. Plus, it was incurable at the time. We now know that it can be cured. Don't know how. Know nothing about it. Also,
I think with antibiotics.
That's probably the correct answer. We should also mention.
Also, we get vaccinated against it as
that's
well.
That's actually very true. I should also mention that we actually talked about TB in, which is tuberculosis. They just called it TB in case anyone doesn't know that. It's fair if you don't. Not everyone reads history crap.
Yeah, but that's they call the vaccination. It's like TB.
Whatever.
Or when I was vaccinated. Because I don't know if you got the same vaccinations that I did.
I don't know if I was ever vaccinated against TB or tuberculosis.
Well, I think I was vaccinated against like TB and diphtheria and something else. It's all in one.
I've definitely had diphtheria.
And I got that when I was 5. And then they did a booster of it, I think, when I was like about 13 or 14.
You know what? I probably was vaccinated against tuberculosis because I was vaccinated against diphtheria. And I remember because it was a big thing when we were going overseas. We were just going to Cuba or something. But there, you have to have certain vaccinations when you leave the country, right? Or go to another country. Anyway, Not relevant. But what I was going to say is that we actually talked about tuberculosis in the Stanley Hotel episode because Mr. Stanley had tuberculosis. That's why they were in Colorado in the first place. So just in case anyone's curious, we did recently talk about it. We didn't go into what it was, though, because it wasn't super relevant to the story. He also survived tuberculosis. He was supposed to like live for 6 months and he built this hotel and he was all beautiful and whatever. And that's because one of the treatments at the time was fresh air. Okay, so that super scientific treatment aside, okay, so adding to the fact that it like spread really easily, many people believe that Kentucky, which is a state, I don't know what Kentucky is,
where they make the fried chicken.
No, that's also Kentucky.
I said Kentucky is a state where they make the fried chicken.
Oh, that's true.
Where Colonel Sanders came from, I think. Yeah, I don't know if he actually was from Kentucky.
I know he was.
You said Kentucky. And then you said, I don't know what Kentucky is. I'm talking about Kentucky. It's a state.
That's true. Okay. So Kentucky is built on low swampland. I did not know this. I cannot verify this. But some people believe that that made it the, quote, perfect breeding grounds, unquote, for the disease. So it's no surprise that many people walked into Waverly Hills and never left. Waverly Hills Sanatorium was the most advanced treatment center in the area. We're going to tell you how advanced in 1 minute. And although it was mainly used to separate the sick from the rest of the population, they did do a considerable amount of barbaric treatments at the hospital. These treatments included, are you ready? Number one, exposing the lungs to UV light to, quote, stop the bacteria, unquote, by way of sunrooms or artificial lighting. Fresh air was also seen as a treatment for it. And that's what Mr. Stanley was told as well by his doctor, that you have to go seek fresh mountain air to be cured of tuberculosis. The second thing that they did was surgically implant balloons into patients' lungs and fill them with air to ensure that the lungs could expand. I'm not sure how hygienic balloons are to stick in your lungs, but I'm not sure, not a medical doctor, but I'm not sure that's what I would recommend. And the third
thing that they have like a surgical balloon that they can insert into people's bodies.
Do you think that they had a surgical balloon in 1929?
Probably, but also you have to think of it this way. Like, imagine it's not good for your body, because when you put foreign objects into your body, it's like breast implants and everybody's getting them removed now. I would assume that a balloon would have a similar sort of effect, although a balloon could probably be removed a little bit more easily and was a little bit less invasive.
So if the balloon method didn't work, as a last ditch effort, they would remove ribs and muscles around the lungs to allow them to expand.
I feel like that's,
I don't
bullshit.
Know why I have the word future here. So needless to say, they didn't see a lot of success at the Waverly Hills Sanatorium as far as their medical progression goes. Some patients were lucky. Some patients do recover from tuberculosis. It's not necessarily a death sentence. It's not anymore. But at that time, there were people who recovered. It was mostly a death sentence, but there were people who recovered. But most of the people left via the, quote, body chute, unquote, which was an enclosed tunnel that went from the hospital to the railroad tracks below, where the bodies were then, quote, lowered in secret into the waiting trains. Unquote.
So they were lowered down the chute, or they were shot down the chute and then lowered?
Well, it sounds like it was, I think the chute, it was like an enclosed thing, so no one saw it. And so I think they were like dropped in the chute, and then on the other end, someone picked them up and lowered them into the train.
Right. Is what I'm picturing. So that's could be pretty wrong. Barbaric. But anyway.
Yeah. This was done in secret so that patients didn't see how many bodies left the hospital, because interestingly enough, and quite progressive for the time, I really do think this, the doctors treating tuberculosis thought that the mental health was just as important as physical health for their patients. So they didn't.
That is, that's shocking.
Isn't that? I was like, what the fuck? wait, what's the year again? So they were really quiet about, they were trying to keep quiet about how many people died in the hospital. It's not that people wouldn't know that, but you know, you probably don't need to see dead bodies when you're at the hospital. Ultimately, it's unclear about how many people actually died at Waverly. Some say numbers as high as tens of thousands, though many historians believe that that's most likely exaggerated. Dr. J. Frank Stewart, who was the former assistant medical director, said that the highest death rate in a single year was 152 people. And based on death certificate requests in 1955, they had 42 deaths. And old hospital records dating back to 1911 show that somewhere around 6,000 people died at the hospital. It's a little, I think the record keeping, the reason why it's so unclear is because the record keeping wasn't like on par in the like 1920s and 30s.
And they lost count.
Yeah.
Of how many dead bodies.
6,000 is still a lot of people to die. Although.
But it's 6,000 in a year.
No. It says dating back to 1911, like, so 1911 until the end, the close of the hospital in like 1962.
That's so not that many, really. It depends on the total number of people that went through the hospital.
That's very like, true.
If, you know, like 6,001 were the number of people in the hospital, then that's a lot. But
then it's huge.
Yeah.
That's so. An average of 117 per year if the same amount died every year. Actually, that's how averages work. Oh, never mind me.
It's all good.
I took math for journalists. I just want to clarify.
You took math for journalists? That's a thing?
It was like part of my undergraduate degree. Before I went back for my graduate degree, I went to an undergraduate degree where one of the classes that they taught us was like how journalists can understand math because apparently we're all really bad at it. I'm not a journalist anymore, so I guess I didn't have the math qualification.
Yeah, but you have that like writer's brain. Like,
that's true.
More than
I am not good at math and numbers, and anyone who listens to this podcast understands that I have some sort of like, there is like numbers dyslexia or something like that. I can't remember what it's actually like. What is it called?
I don't know.
It just says dyslexia for numbers. Whatever. Okay, whatever. I clearly have it because every time we have a date in this podcast, I screw it up unless I look like point it out to myself and make sure. And that's not just podcast specific. I screw up dates all the time. I can't read years. It's years that I have problems with. Anyway, I'm done talking about my personal issues.
I think it says sometimes described as dyslexia for numbers, dyscalculia.
Oh, look, I can't read either.
Is a learning difficulty associated with numeracy, which affects the ability to acquire mathematical skills. I don't know.
I don't think that, I mean, I do. Can I not acquire mathematical skills, or am I just plain lazy? I feel like it's the second one on that one. I just have problems reading like dates and larger, any number that's larger than like 3. And I usually, no, the reason why is because there's like a beginning number and an end number, and then I screw up the middle numbers. That's where my problem is, or I like screw up the two end
numbers. Oh, any number that's more than 3 digits.
That's not the number 3. 3 digits. Sorry. Whoopsies. No, because you know how every time it's like 1929, I read it like 1992.
Yeah.
Or whatever. I can't. I just, the ends of it, I just can't do it.
I get it.
Try and try again, I do. Anyway.
Anyway.
That's enough about.
Now,
my lack of numerical abilities.
Let's talk about what everybody wants to hear. Ghosts.
Ooh.
Ooh. The hospital started to gain a reputation as being haunted after its doors were closed, and there are a number of spirits that are said to be lurking inside its walls. One of the most famous places in Waverly Hills for paranormal tales is the hospital's fifth floor. When it was in operation, this floor had two nurses' stations plus a pantry linen room. Plus a pantry and a linen room? Oh, no.
Well, plus a pantry linen room,
medicine room, and two medium-sized rooms on each side of each nursing station. For those counting, that makes eight rooms on this floor. So
patient rooms, I should have said.
There were eight patient rooms on the floor?
Yeah, because there's two nurses' stations, and on each side of the nurses' station, each side of the nurses' station, there's two medium-sized rooms. I'm so sorry, guys. I don't know what I was doing when I was writing this.
Clearly, I'm having trouble as well.
It makes logical sense. Sort of.
It's in room 502. Witnesses see shapes moving in windows, hear disembodied voices, and even allegedly watch apparitions jump to their deaths, except they're already dead.
Ooh, yeah.
There are many rumors and tales about what this area of the hospital was and why it's haunted, but one of the biggest tales told is that it was used to house patients with mental illness, though that's blatantly untrue. Okay. Regardless.
It's a rumor, but it's not a real rumor. I mean, it's a real rumor. It's not true.
Yes.
That floor never held.
Okay.
Never specifically held patients with mental illness. Not to say that they wouldn't have been on that floor, but that's not what the floor was
right.
for.
Regardless, the rumor persists. As do the rumors of death within the room. According to legend, in 1928, a nurse was found dead in room 502. The 29-year-old was unmarried and pregnant, which was scandalous at that time, and had hanged herself from a light fixture, though some say pipes or rafters. Then in 1932, a nurse who worked primarily in 502 jumped from the roof patio and plunged several stories to her death. Others believe she was pushed. There is no documentation of either death, and they're ruled unlikely by many, especially in the case of the hanging, due to the fact that the pipes in the room weren't installed until 1972. But what if it was a light fixture? Oh, and the original light fixture, which is still there, would be unable to hold the weight of a person. However, a former nurse named John Thornberry, who passed away in 2006, said that the deaths did happen, but many question that since he was born in 1922 and would have been six at the time of the first one. Despite the lack of...
They basically just question his credibility, although I feel like he could know. But I also feel like if
those deaths happened, they aren't going to advertise it. Like... They would have wanted to cover it up.
No, they definitely wouldn't have. And if he was a nurse at the hospital, there's like some sort of, you know.
Yeah.
I think people are basically saying like they've tried to verify it with like death certificates and like crime reports, and they just are not able to.
Yeah, I get it. Despite the lack of proof on either incident, strange things are often reported on the floor and specifically in room 502. Ghostly sounds, slamming doors, the lights turning on and off, and objects being thrown by nobody. Visitors also say that they are struck by unseen hands and see apparitions in the doorways and corridors.
Oh, this is supposed to be me speaking.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I figured that much.
Andrea three times in a row. Okay, I'm glad I didn't, like, screw it up after that, though. Okay. While room 502 is where the majority of the paranormal activity is reported, there are also a number of other ghosts and strange occurrences reported throughout the hospital. The ghost of a little girl is often seen running up and down the third floor solarium.
Yep.
Which is a cool word.
It's like a sunroom. Yeah.
I just think it's a cool word.
Okay.
There's a little boy with a leather ball, and he's spotted in one of the hallways. We've heard that if you roll the ball on the floor to him, he will roll it back to you. That's terrifying to me.
It's kind of cute.
It's adorable. I mean, he probably just wants to play, but I also think that would, like, be very scary.
It would scare me, but honestly, if I had an encounter with a ghost, I think that's, like, about the least terrifying experience you could have.
That's, like, the one you're going with? You're like, I will pick this one?
Yes.
It seems tame. Apparently, a mysterious hearse appears. I don't know if this is, like, an actual hearse or, like, the apparition of a hearse, but it appears at the back of the building to drop off coffins. Again, don't know if they're real coffins or if they're apparitions of coffins, but that's a thing.
Well, I think it's, like, I do think it's, like, a ghost hearse. I think is what it would be. That's what I imagine.
I feel like
as.
That's like super elaborate for ghosts.
I don't know.
Is there like a ghost? Like, who's the person who drives a hearse? Like funeral man?
I don't really chauffeur? Know that. A hearse driver has a name other than hearse driver, or maybe like, you know, like funeral chauffeur. I don't know.
What is a hearse driver called? They're simply called hearse drivers. Okay. So this is even funnier. Sometimes they're sometimes referred to as chauffeurs. Yay, I win.
What?
It says hearse drivers are quite simply called hearse drivers. They're sometimes referred to as chauffeurs.
Yeah, that's what I said. I think it's called a hearse driver. But, I mean, it would be kind of fun to call him a funeral chauffeur.
Yeah, well, this blog says that they are sometimes called that.
Well,
it's the cake blog.
There you go. They're called just a chauffeur, not a funeral chauffeur, right?
No, not a funeral chauffeur. I feel like that just jazzes it up too much. Okay. Anyway, there's also a woman. She has bleeding wrists and she cries for help. A man in a white coat, I'm going to assume he's a doctor, although he could be a patient with a white coat, walks into the kitchen, which often smells of cooking food, despite the kitchen being a very disastrous state. It has broken windows, fallen plaster, broken tables and chairs, puddles of water, debris lying around, and a leaky roof, which is probably explains the puddles of water. Footsteps are often heard in the kitchen as well. The door swings open and shut, and there's the smell of fresh baked bread in the air. I'm actually not opposed to the whole fresh baked bread thing. I'd be okay with that.
I don't even eat a lot of bread, but I love the smell of fresh baked bread.
Well, the smell of it is delicious. And then finally, there are slamming doors, strange footsteps, eerie sounds, and lights being turned on and off, despite the fact that the power is not currently running. I don't know if it is or isn't, but it obviously wasn't running at the time that whoever wrote the article that I got that information from, whatever.
You can actually visit Waverly Hills Sanatorium today. It's open for paranormal and historic tours and both public and private investigations. Tickets.
I should clarify that those are paranormal investigations, not just like general run-of-the-mill investigations.
Yeah.
I don't know what you would be doing, but just so everyone knows.
Tickets vary depending on what you want to do, but tour tickets look to be $25. It's also cool to note that they do public investigations, paranormal, which Tay already pointed out.
Yeah.
Those ones cost $75 to attend, starting at midnight. No, thank you very much.
I was thinking, like, how cool is that?
So if you're looking to scare yourself, that might be a fun place to do it. Though be aware, they are like 6-hour events. That's a hard pass. Overall, it has.
That's true. I would rather watch a what? Movie. I said that's true. I would rather watch a movie.
I would rather not spend a night in a haunted place. Like, at all. That is, like,
I'm not opposed to it.
Down at the bottom of my list of things that I would ever do in this life.
Of your to-do list?
Yeah. Overall, it has a 4 out of 5 on TripAdvisor, but before you book your tickets and attend in a respectably socially distant manner. Oh, so that it's open right now?
It is open now, as far as the website looks like. You can, like, book a ticket and stuff.
Cool. There are some reviews you might want to hear. Marie is mom said, was way over the top on trying to convince people that she was best friends with the spirits and really tried to be entertaining us with her jokes. Who is this?
I'm assuming she means the tour guide.
That's what I thought. She was not. No one laughed. We first started out in the death tunnel, which was pitch black. Literally, a death tunnel being pitch black. That's shocking.
So maybe, remember how they were saying they like took people out of like the death chute? Maybe they actually like wheeled them out.
Maybe.
On gurneys.
I'm not sure. We will have to put this on our list of places to tour, but not. I don't want to do the overnight one.
We'll do a daytime tour. Yeah.
Literally people pushing and bumping into each other. That's not very socially distanced. Saying sorry over and over. Since I couldn't see anything, it was not fun. How can you experience something when you can't even see the floor? We then proceeded to other parts of the building. We couldn't use our phones for light and could only use flashlights in the stairway. I literally spent most of my time trying not to trip or bump into anything. The bad cop tour guide, whose name I didn't get, was rude and honestly had some serious body odor.
Oh no.
When we got to the third floor, we finally got a reprieve from the darkness because of the windows. Then we were plunged back into darkness again, making it very frustrating. Chelsea would say, did you see that? I'm thinking, see what? So Chelsea is the tour guide with body odor?
I think so. No, I think there's a second one with body odor because I don't know.
I don't know either. I can't even see 5 inches in front of my face, much less a possible shadow figure. She made a point of taking us into a new room that was renovated for conventions. I thought it was another huge waste of time. The only cool thing about it was the three coffins. Throughout the whole tour, we could use the flash on our cameras a whopping total of 3 times because it was prohibited everywhere else. We started the tour at about 8:10 and we walked out of the building at 9:50. That, in my calculation, was not a 2-hour tour. No, you're correct. It was an hour and 40 just a minutes. Little bit under. It was a huge waste of $25 and my time.
Yay. Well, Ayuma Vizima, I'm going to go with for this one. I'm sorry, I don't know. Said, quote, this was the most boring tour I ever took. It was extremely hot and humid inside, which I could have dealt with better if I wasn't bored into a coma by the tour guide. Seriously, I assumed they would speak about the history place and even possibly some ghost stuff since it's supposed to be, quote, haunted. But instead, he told us nothing but very boring stories of people from previous tours.
Well, then.
And other nonsense not related to the sanatorium. He dragged out these boring stories of people I don't care about as I was dripping with sweat while being confined to a tiny area in a large crowd of people with no airflow. Because God forbid you step 5 feet away from the crowd of strangers when they accuse you of straying off. I was miserable and could not wait for this to end. I wasn't sure what was going to kill me first, the heat exhaustion or the boredom. If I had the time, I would have rather chose the overnight stay when you can explore on your own instead of listening to the boring tour guide.
Rowdy Amy said, while on our tour, we were not allowed to use flashlights or flash cameras. Sounds like she took the same tour as Maria's mom.
Yeah.
Now, as one who does paranormal investigations, I somewhat understand the reasons for not being allowed to use these things, but going up and down dark stairwells and hallways makes no sense. It also sounds really dangerous and like a lawsuit in the making.
Which is what she just says.
Yeah, okay.
I was also thinking that when I was reading it.
Sorry, I'm just always in my legal frame of mind.
So, you know what? That was the first thing that came to mind when I was reading these. I was like, that sounds like a fucking lawsuit waiting to happen.
Totally. And they're in the States where everybody just sues everybody for everything.
Exactly.
And she goes on to say, it is a tremendous liability issue for the owner. Without lighting, one could easily trip or fall. Without being allowed to use a flash, all the photos we took while visiting were useless. Well, yeah. Completely yeah. black. So now we don't even have pictures of the interior of the building. Our tour guide treated our group like a bunch of 12-year-old children. While touring one of the rooms, me and another visitor were looking out the door down the hall. She scolded us like a couple of kids and asked us to get back in the room. We had never left the room. We had noticed some light anomalies down the hall. Isn't that what we were here for? What we were there for? I don't have enough time to go into greater detail, but I wanted to warn other paranormal investigators not to waste their time. At the end of our tour, we vocalized our opinions to the tour guide, and she continued to berate us in front of the other visitors. If your guide is the ER nurse, beware.
I think that, yeah, if you don't want to walk around in the dark, it sounds like this isn't the tour to go on. I do think it's like a massive liability issue. And if the owner should ever hear this podcast, and if they are really making people walk off the stairs, I wouldn't do that. Not a legal expert, so what do I know?
I think you have enough legal experience to know.
I feel like that's actually just logical sense.
Yes.
That requires zero legal knowledge, but whatever.
True.
I can think of a few lawyers, though, that would be happy to sue you. This is all for this week's episode, but you can catch us live on Saturday, March 27th at 12 p.m. Mountain Time. We are in Calgary. You can just Google Calgary time and figure out what it is in your time zone. We would love you to come hangsies with us, or we'll record it alone. Whatever. If no one comes, it'll just be the two of us chilling on fucking Twitch. Why not?
Well, you can find us on... really hope some people show up. Please.
It would be nice. We would feel less special if no one showed up. You can hang out with us on social media. You can find us at the Lady Dicks pretty much everywhere with the exception of Twitch, because we're not allowed to be the Lady Dicks on Twitch, so the Spooky Traveler with two L's. If you don't know how to spell traveler the Canadian way, that's fine. Go to our website and you can just click through to the link there. And yeah, go and sign up for our emailing list. Actually, that's the other thing I was going to say. If you want to come to the live event and you like want an email reminder, I'm going to send out an email to everyone on the email list like 30 minutes before we go live with the link. So if you don't want to do any work for it, go to the website, sign up for the email list, and it will be delivered to you.
That sounds really good. If anyone wants yeah. to join us, please, please join us. For charity's sake.
Yay!
Charity. And in the meantime, try not to ghost anyone.
Okay, cool.